folks. Hi, darling. And hello to you too, Martin, since I'm sure the folks will probably play this to you sooner or later. Well, it's time for me to make another tape and get caught up to date here, since I received that magnificent tape of yours and also some letters, so I'm behind and I gotta get caught up. And believe me, this tape is the easiest way to do it. Well, I think I'll start out by answering your letter and tell you a little bit about what I've been doing here recently. First of all, I was glad to hear that you all got together while Wayne and Mary were there. It sounded like you had a real good time. Yes, I did get a lot of laughs out of the tape. You don't realize how many people are talking at once at the dinner table, do you? Until everybody played on tape, then you realize what a big noise it is. But it really was good to hear from you all, and I must say you sounded quite natural, and I think you all did a real fine job for your first big experiment at taping. Of course, darling, you were your usual professional self. So, I got a real big kick out of it, and I've already played it a couple times, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm glad to hear that Wayne and Mary finally got their new car. I was kind of worried whether they got it or not. Joe told me in the tapes he just sent me that they did have their new Camaro, and I'm sure they're really enjoying it on this trip, especially all the miles they've got to put on in the next few weeks. In fact, I was just thinking of Wayne today, climbing around in those mountains out there. I suppose he's just about done with survival training now, and about ready to start the real survival test. Well, actually, he's got about a 6 or 7 week reprieve, I guess, before he actually begins. But I'm sure he's enjoying the course as I did, and I'm sure that he's going to enjoy the AC-47 too. As I've been telling you, they're doing a real fine job over here, a real important job. And I know he's going to have a real sense of accomplishment in flying a particular airplane. Now, it sounds like the Loman Church is coming right along, and that was real nice, that thing you cut out of the Academy Bulletin there. Speaking of church over here, you've asked me a couple times. Sunday is just another work day over here. In fact, we don't even keep track of what day it is that way. But we do. The chaplains do have services. When they can work them in, they usually have them on Sundays and sometimes during the week too, just kind of in the field type services. And it's a very general type service, a non-denominational, since we don't have that many chaplains around. I told you, I believe, that I was living next to our battalion chaplain when we were down at Conjuan. He's a real swell fellow, and we've got to know each other real well, and I sure enjoyed talking to him. He's very well-read, very intellectual type, but a real one of the boys type guy at the same time, and the guys in the battalion really think a lot of him. And that's real important out here because, as you know, the chaplain tends to have a fairly strong influence on how these guys feel. And a lot of these guys, as I pointed out earlier, are pretty young, and they have pretty mixed emotions about being in this war in the first place. And he can have a fairly determining influence on how they feel about their actions over here, I guess you'd say. I must say that he really does have his work cut out for him, because some of the types that join these paratrooper outfits are pretty rough and tumble types, and he's going to have to work long and hard to get some of them straightened out, I'm afraid. Say, I'll have to agree with that president of Baker University, Rod. So that is the greatest, what is it, the most glorious organ in Christendom. All right. I have to be a little prejudiced, I guess. You don't think so, huh, darling? Well, I do hope that your fund drives are coming along and you're able to scrape up that money. That's an awful lot of money to get, and I know you're having your problems. Speaking of your Kansas weather, yes, I must say that you certainly are having some spasmodic weather, all right. I've been watching you in the paper. See, we get the Stars and Stripes over here. It's a military newspaper that has a synopsis of all the important news in the United States, and they also throw in any weather that is of a rather extreme nature, and I must say Kansas has had more in its share lately. In fact, the whole Midwest, from Colorado around. And I found it rather interesting, especially in contrast to our weather over here, which is so stable. Now, we have no frontal weather, as I told you before. There's no such thing as a front over here, and we never have any violent weather. The most violent weather we have are very hard rain showers, very large thunder showers. But even then, we have no hail and very little lightning and thunder. It's just one hell of a lot of rain. But I've noticed that you had another cold front yet even just this last week or so, I believe it was. And I've been rousing Joe, too, about all the snow down there. It was real sad as far as killing off the fruit and flowers. I hope it didn't get all of them, and I hope it didn't kill your flowers. I know you always have so many nice flowers on the back. I noticed that even good old Lubbock didn't escape the path of that cold front. I noticed that it was clear down below freezing down at Lubbock also, and was down pretty cold even further south down by Big Spring. It was down around freezing also, so it looks like it must have been a real gusser for this time of year especially. Well, I believe I've covered most of the things in your letter. I also wanted to throw in a couple of things for Doris and Lauren and the boys. I certainly enjoyed your part of the tape also, and glad to hear that Daryl and Dennis, you guys are still enjoying your sports, and sounds like you're putting in a lot of work there. But I guess that's the way it goes. You never get something for nothing in this world, huh? Sounds like you're having a good time to swimming pool again, Daryl. I suppose there's a lot of good scenery over there too, isn't there? I must say, Doris, in particular, you had a very polished delivery on your tape, and your voice comes across very soft and soothing. I think you ought to look into going into the Late Late Show type music like Darwin was doing. You would really put him to sleep. That's a very nice recording voice, so I think you got some raw latent talent there you ought to take advantage of, huh? Well, let's see, I guess I'll start bringing you up to date on what I've been doing here recently. I think the last time I wrote you, I was telling you that we were getting ready to move. We all kind of hated to leave Happy Valley. That's what we call it down there. We call it Happy Valley. It was such a pretty area down there. It was up in a sort of a plateau region in the mountains. Not real high, but considerably cooler than down on the coast. For one thing, we always seemed to have a breeze there, especially at night. We always had a nice, cool breeze. It's made it very pleasant sleeping. The mountains around there were very pretty. There's a lot of rocky streams, big waterfalls, and of course a lot of trees and undergrowth and stuff, which makes it difficult as far as our job here. But from the air, especially, it's a beautiful country. And the valley we were in there would have just made some fantastic cattle country. And we were just talking about how much it's going to waste. Those grass are almost waist high. And it grows all year round, of course, because it rains all the time. And it would just be fantastic to put some cattle or sheep or something in there. But as it is, most of it is just sitting there going to waste. Most of that particular area down there is inhabited by the Montagnards. And these people they use just enough land for their own little needs there. They don't think anything about producing for anyone else, of course. It's just a self-sustained type operation, and that's about it. And they have a few of their own goats and just a few water buffalo, and that's just about the size of their endeavor in the agricultural world. I guess it's always kind of hard for us Americans to understand why these people don't have more ambition and want to try and get ahead. They apparently just don't give a darn. They've done the same thing for centuries and centuries, and I guess they must be happy in their own way, so I guess it's not for us to force them to change. On the other hand, we don't want anyone else to force them to change either, and that's the main reason we're here, of course. Well, anyway, on the 5th and 6th of May, we finally made the big move, and believe me, it is a big move when you start moving a whole brigade of troops. For instance, it took us about 3 or 4 convoys. Each convoy consisted of about 60 to 70 semi-trailers, the big semi-type trucks. along with many, many little Jeeps and, of course, Jeeps to pull the howitzers and stuff like that also. They'd string out for several miles down the road, and we had to run about three or four of these convoys down to the train, where they were loaded onto some ships that are called LSDs, or landing ship decks. Now, these, they're the type of drive right up on the beach, and the sort of a front curves down, and you can just drive the Jeeps and trucks and stuff right straight in there, already loaded. This makes it a lot easier for us to move, of course. Well, from there, the landing ship docks took the brigade by sea up north to an area where they are now presently setting up. It's called Duck Fur. This, I don't think you would probably find on a map because it's just a real little town, but it's approximately 25 miles south of Quang Nai, and it's right on the coast. Now, Quang Nai should show up on any halfway large map of Vietnam because it's one of the larger towns, and it's also the name of the province. The area that we're in now is we're just about a mile and a half off the coast where the brigade is located. And of course, about 15 miles to the west, the mountains begin. Along the coast itself, it's a big flat, what we call an alluvial plain. It's real flat land, such as like is down in the Delta. This is where they grow a lot of rice, and that is particularly important right now because the rice harvest is going on, and of course we try and keep the rice from the Viet Cong. We're not trying to make sure the rice goes to what it should, to the Vietnamese people. So, the friendly Vietnamese people, that is. So we're particularly interested in guarding the rice crop. And then also this same area has belonged to the VC now for a good 15 to 20 years, and they've been digging in for about the last 10 years. So it's going to be a real problem to smoke Charlie out of these hills. We have all three of our battalions back in the mountains now, anywhere from 20 to 25 clicks to the west of Duck Fur. They've also built us a runway down at Duck Fur. They're not quite complete with it yet. So, in the meantime, we have been flying out of Chu Lai, C-H-U-L-A-I. Now, this is a real large base, located up to the north, about 50 or 60 miles north of Duck Fur, or about 25 to 30 miles north of Quang Nai. And it's right on the coast also. This is what was a very large Marine base. The Marines have moved out since we have come into the area, and the Army is now taking over this installation at Chu Lai, although the Marines are remaining behind with their aircraft. We have a lot of jets here. We have A-4s, Navy A-4Ds, and we have Marine F-4Bs, and then we have a variety of other cargo aircraft, and of course all our specs are up here also. And then there are a lot of Army aircraft also here because this is now the location of the Task Force Oregon headquarters. This probably is all rather confusing to you, and it was to me at first, but this whole operation in the south part of I Corps is being run by what's called Task Force Oregon. Now, this task force is made up of several Army brigades, and one of the brigades, of course, is ours, the 101st Airborne. There's also the 196th Infantry Brigade. In fact, the whole 196th Infantry Division is here. And then we have a brigade of the 3rd, it's called the 25th. The 3rd Brigade of the 25th Division is also located here. And all of these units are put together into one fighting unit called a task force. And of course, it has to have a name, so they call it Task Force Oregon. Confused? Okay. I wanted to mention this because I know you're going to be reading about Task Force Oregon in the newspapers, and I want you to understand just what the situation was and who I was working with. So whenever you read about Task Force Oregon, that's our outfit. The reason you are going to be reading about it is that this operation we're on right now is considered one of the most important in the war in Vietnam. the reason for that was that we have three NVA divisions, the North Vietnam divisions, that have moved down into I Corps. One of these divisions is located in the mountains where we are presently moving into. Of course, we never know exactly where they are because they managed to stay hidden pretty well, but we're going to go find them. And the intelligence that we have gotten recently seems to indicate that they're going to make one of their big pushes, one of their big summer offensives in this area. Now, they seem to feel that if they can succeed in this particular area, then they will press on with a war. It seems that they operate the success or not non-success, I don't know what you'd call it, the success or failure of this particular operation will be important to the VC and the NVA activities in the future. If they fail here, and we fully intend to see that they do, then they might very well start considering going to the conference table. So we're pretty determined to shove them back into the mountains and show them what a real fighting outfit is like. And believe me, if anybody can do that, it's the 101st Airborne. These guys are a real tough bunch of nuts. And there's probably not a better fighting outfit in Vietnam right now. The Marines would probably argue that, but I really have a lot of confidence in these guys, and as I've told you before, I'm real glad I'm working with them. I've talked to so many folks who have been real disgusted working with the Arvin, because every time they start to get into a fight, they tend to either just hold their own or turn and run. And we just don't understand this way of fighting, of course. We've never done this, and we're not about to start now. So I'm glad I'm with that type of unit. We've been enjoying our stay here in July. It's relatively plush for Vietnam, although we've had a little problem with our water. But the base is quite large, as I explained, and the Marines have an officers club here, and so does the Army. So we take advantage of their facilities, and we're staying in some actual built-up hooches. They're wooden type with tin roofs, and this is a little improvement over our tents. At least we have a wooden floor. Although this time of year, the roof is no great problem in this area because the rainy season has just ended, and this particular area along the coast has moved into the dry season. Since we're in the southwest monsoon now, and the rain is in the mountains, and the area along the coast here is dry, similar to the coast of California in the summer. We have some clouds in the morning, and we have thunderstorm buildups over the mountains. And once in a very great while, these thunderstorms will move their way out to the coast for a little shower, but usually we don't get any rain at all here. And of course, it runs up around 100 degrees every day with a humidity around 80% or better. So needless to say, it's very uncomfortable, but I guess I must be getting kind of used to it. We all just kind of ignore the weather now. You know, sew your hat. I mean, that's just the way it goes. At least we have the ocean here, and I must say, some real fine swimming. They have a real nice piece of beach laid out here, and in our off time, that's where we head for because it's the only cool spot around. So we've been getting in a lot of beach time lately. And that's about the only recreation. They don't have any other form of recreation available here, really. So it's what everybody does is goes to the beach in their off time. Being here next to the ocean, at least we get an ocean breeze every afternoon, and this helps to cool it out some. If you move inland very far, though, of course, then it becomes very uncomfortable, just like down in Los Angeles. But right on the coast here, it's really not too bad at all. And our particular hooches are up on a kind of a little hill overlooking the ocean, so we get a real nice breeze in the afternoons. Also, we have a very beautiful view here. The coast kind of curls around in a big horseshoe, and you're looking out across the bay, and in the evenings, it's real pretty. As usual, we're having anywhere from good to very good chow from the Army, and one welcome change up here is that they have milk that tastes like milk. And that is good to stand that other stuff that was reconstituted variety, but they have a new process of reconstituting milk up here. Some big company, I think it's Borden's, but I'm not sure, has figured out another way of reconstituting milk over here. And the first plant they built was at Da Nang, so all of I Corps is now getting that particular variety of milk, and it's just tremendous. It tastes so near like the real milk that you can't tell the difference. And it's a welcome change for us, because just about anyone buying our outfit loves milk, and we've really missed it. Like the first night we were here, I think we all drank about 2 gallons of milk. We could hardly walk out the door. It's been a real nice to have around. And the food in general has been real good. That's never been one of our problems since I've joined the Army organization here. I've been eating quite well. In fact, I may be one of the first guys to come back actually having gained weight in Vietnam, the rate I'm going now. And I've also been very lucky in avoiding the usual problem with the runs. I've only had a couple of mild cases of diarrhea, and that's pretty rare over here. So I'm knocking on wood and hope I can continue with my good luck. Of course, the other big problem over here is malaria, and we all take pills. We have 2 different types of pills. One we take daily, one we take once a week. And these 2 pills take care of the 3 major varieties of malaria. There are also some others, but these are the 3 strains that are most popular here in Vietnam. And there's only one of these that's real dangerous, so they have had a few guys die from malaria over here, though, and so we don't take any chances at all. Besides the pills, of course, we have a rule about sundown, sleeves down, and this keeps the mosquitoes from biting you on the arms, although surprisingly enough, I've had very little trouble with mosquitoes over here. They don't seem to bite you too much, and there aren't too many of them. The only trouble is that the ones that do bite you can cause a lot more problems than the ones in the States. They are real small mosquitoes, and they hardly make any bite at all, so you hardly realize you've been bitten, and perhaps that's the biggest trouble of all. But we use mosquito netting, and of course we keep our bodies pretty well covered at night in some way, shape, or form, and then we use insect sprays, especially the stuff I was telling you about that's made in the Odessa, Kansas. That stuff is just fantastic. It's the best insect spray I've ever seen. And then, between that and the pills, well, we've pretty well solved the malaria problem over here. I don't know if I told you, I had a big trunk made down in the train. They didn't have any footlockers, so the guy just built me a footlocker, which was real fun, and it really helped out in this move. I put all of my stuff in the footlocker, except just what I needed for the first couple days. And then they flew our footlockers up here in a big Chinook helicopter. And that really helped out, since it's a lot easier way to transport stuff without it getting all broken up. Well, everything came through in good shape, and we're enjoying our hoots like pretty good here. All the facts are living in one kind of a dormitory type hooch right now, and it makes it handy for transportation. We have 2 or 3 of our own jeeps up here also, so that comes in pretty handy. We fly at least once a day just about all of the time. I've been averaging at least once a day and getting a lot of flying time, and of course that's I really enjoy that, and that's what we're here for, so we like to get that flying time. And we try and keep one truck down in the area working with the units all the time, all day long, and at night if necessary, but we don't usually get too involved much in night operations. The troops stay pretty well set at night and set up ambushes and things like that, but to try and hike in these mountains at night is almost impossible. They're extremely rugged, and it's just a good way to break your legs, and it's about all you're going to accomplish. It's hard enough to find Charlie in the daytime, let alone trying to find him at night. We moved our battalions into the woods about 2 days ago, and usually when we insert our troops, the Army calls it an insertion when they put their troops into a certain area. And this is by helicopter, of course. And just prior to these insertions of a battalion of troops, why, we prepare the area with what's called a landing zone preparation. And the landing zones, of course, we want to make sure that there are no enemies in the near area there that could shoot our helicopters down while the troops are getting out. So we run these LZ preps by usually putting 750 and 500 pound bombs, also some napalm, and once in a while rockets, into the areas that we plan to go into. And of course, we folks run all these airstrikes, and I run into a real busy day here about 2 days ago. I ran 6 airstrikes in about 2 hours, which is just about as fast as you can take them. I was running F-4Cs and F-100s and B-57s. We also, in addition to the LZ preps, we also hit some suspected VC battalion headquarters and also some regimental headquarters of the NVA divisions there. Now, when we say suspected, we say this because we have intelligence sources, including some defectors from their organizations that point out that this is where their organizations were. Now, it doesn't mean they necessarily still are there, but a lot of times they are. Also, we have ways of detecting radio communications and things like this. So all of these sources of intelligence come together and point out that there probably is a company located here, or a headquarters of some type. Now, we usually hit these targets by air, and then we go follow up with the troops and go in and see if we can find anything. Usually these things are dug in such a manner that if you don't hit them by air, you're probably not going to be able to get into them without a real hard fight. A good example were the Marines here that you just read about about 2 days ago. They got into a big fight up north here, and they had the NVA had dug into the mountainside, and they had 8 layers of logs on top of them. Well, you're just not going to get through that many trees with anything except big, big bombs, and that's what they used, 1,000 and 2,000 pound bombs. And that was the only way they could get into that hillside. Otherwise, we'd have been sitting there fighting and losing many, many men, just like we did fighting the Japanese, like in Iwo Jima and places like that, where they were dug in like that. So air power is, again, telling the difference over here, and of course, I'm proud to be able to say that, because that's our business over here. But it really is helping. The Army admits it, and they say it's always nice to know that they can bring in what they call the big hammer, and that's us, the big hammer, whenever they need it. So if they get in a bind, even a real small unit over here, why, they can call us up, since we're always overhead somewhere, and call in for some air power, and we'll have it there. And if they can hold out for a little while, why, we'll be able to help them. Of course, they also have their own helicopter gunships. And for small skirmish type operations, usually this is sufficient. These little gunships carry rocket pads and machine guns, and they carry quite a bit of firepower. They're not too accurate, but they can work in close, and they also can get there in a hurry. Every battalion has its own set of gunships, and these guys can get in there within just a matter of very few minutes and help out a squad that's being overrun by, say, a much larger division or company or something. So it's all highly integrated, and of course communications is the most important thing over here, because if you can't talk to a unit, you're in trouble. And vice versa, if they can't talk to you, they're in even bigger trouble, because then they can't call in for help, and especially if they're being overrun. So radios are all important over here, and we have run into several problems in communication, since our radios are mainly line of sight type things. We have UHF and VHF, and the Army uses FM. And FM is, of course, a form of VHF, and this is line of sight type stuff. So you do run into some problems if you're behind a mountain, or you're down real low, why your range is very limited. And once in a while, you're not able to talk to the units. And again, this is where we help out, because being in the air, just about everybody can talk to us. So a lot of times we have to relay messages from somebody on the ground across a mountain to the battalion headquarters. You dig me? I hope all this isn't too confusing. I'm trying to explain a little about how we operate here. And of course I have to be kind of careful not to say too much on here, but I do try and explain a little bit of the basics of what we're doing. Biggest advantage is having this mobility, and it's mainly through the helicopters. In other words, we can just pick up a whole element of troops and a couple choppers and take them and drop them off in some other area and within just a matter of minutes. And in the old days, this would have taken hours, maybe even days, to make this same movement, to put the troops in another area where they were more badly needed, or just to move them to another area to search. So the helicopter is probably the one biggest advantage that we've had over previous operations, excluding maybe Korea, and is making all the difference in the world in the Army's capability to fight Charlie over here. Without this mobility, it would just take us, I think, centuries to complete this type of search and destroy type operations that we are on. It's just, these jungles are so thick that you can just make very little headway. And without the helicopter, it would just take forever to try and move around and search out the areas that we think most likely that Charlie is hiding out. Of course, he'll try and strike us once in a while, but mainly he's on the defensive now. And we're pushing him as hard as we can. And he doesn't stay and fight very long. Usually he'll just try and snipe away at you. He'll try and hit you in a weak place, and then he'll run again. He never stays to fight because he knows we can bring in air power and wipe him out if he does. You notice that I say we a lot, and when I'm saying we, I'm speaking of the Army and us, and really I consider myself a part of this Army organization because that's who we're working with, who we're working for, and who we're supporting. So the we in this case includes the Army and is the Army mainly, mainly the 101st Airborne, since that's who I'm with. That's why we like to live right with these guys in the field as much as we can, because we like to keep a high rapport with them. And by knowing a guy personally, you tend to be a little more involved, and you'll tend to do a little more for them. Well, I see my tanks running out on this side. I'll be back with you in just a minute.